I'm David Mandelbaum. I'm the artistic director of New Yiddish Rep, and I'm pleased to be here at the University of Northern Colorado on Dave's Gone By, and I look forward to speaking with Rabbi Saul Solomon.
Oh, shalom, my friends. This is your old buddy, Rabbi Saul Solomon, thrilled to be here with you talking about the theater. Now, let me ask you, is there room in New York for two Yiddish theaters? I say there's room for 2,000, but for now, we'll settle for two. Now, one, of course, is the very long-running Volksbühne, but the other is the new Yiddish Rep, founded by artistic director David Mandelbaum, who is with us on the telephone. He's going to talk about founding this theater, also all the experimental theater he was doing before this, as well as productions that this troupe has done, including Yiddish versions of Waiting for Godot and Death of a Salesman. So please, would you welcome to the neighborhood David Mandelbaum. Shalom!
Shalom aleichem.
Shalom aleichem to you too. So how are you? How are things?
Things are not bad. You know, the usual frenetic time before a show opens. We are going to open in 2 weeks with a Yiddish translation of Clifford Odets's Awake and Sing, a very Jewish play that Clifford Odets, nay Gorodetsky, began in 1933. In 35, when it was finally put up on Broadway, a translation into Yiddish was commissioned by the Federal Theater Project, a branch of the WPA. It was a depression, and Roosevelt had initiated this works program, and it employed a great many actors. The show was written for the Group Theater, one of the seminal theater companies in the United States, modern theater company.
And it was actually seminal and fluid together, which is kind of interesting. but let me ask you about this play. So it's kind of a Jewish-ish play anyway, and it's been done on Broadway. They revived it just a few years ago. What do you get out of it in Yiddish, putting it into Yiddish, that you didn't get in the original English?
The real flavor of a Jewish immigrant family living in the Bronx. I mean, look, you might think that I would say this about every play, but not so. This play actually is a lot better play in Yiddish than it is in English. And Odets, when he first wrote it, had a lot of Yiddish in it, which was deleted at the behest of all people, Lee Strasberg and Harold Klerman, because they thought it was too ethnic. So the irony is that he wrote it for Stella Adler, Luther Adler, Morris Karnofsky, John Garfield, who was actually Julius Garfinkel. Strasberg was born on the other side. These are all people who grew up in Yiddish-speaking homes, and they wanted to sanitize it. So, and they did. But the play, the original play, was called I Got the Blues, and it was scattered with Yiddishisms and references to things like Yorkside candles. That all disappeared for the Broadway version.
But in your version, you not only put that back in, but you took the English stuff and made it all Yiddish, yes?
Yeah, it's the play it was translated by Chavrut Paver, a much-beloved writer of children's stories, and he wrote a series about Lopchik, the left-wing dog.
What? Wait, what?
Both Chavrut Paver and Odets, of course, were quite
socialistic.
Although Odets, during McCarthy, named names, he kind of forgot where he was coming from.
I didn't realize that. I didn't realize he was one of those people like that film director. That
Ilya Kazan.
Kazan, right. I didn't realize Odets was also pressured and failed under pressure, I guess we could say.
I guess you could say. The irony is that John Garfield is one of the people who he probably named. And Garfield's career, he was one of the most promising young actors in the film industry, and his career never came back. He died, some say, of despair at the age of 39.
Wow.
So Odets had a storied history, but the play itself remains a very interesting picture of Depression-era New York. It's a wonderful picture of your typically dysfunctional Jewish family with the addition of the economic pressures of the Depression added on top of everything else.
Now, you are directing this Yiddish Awaken Sing, right? And it's at the, I should mention, it's the New Yiddish Rep is the organization putting it on. It's the organization you founded. But it's at the 14th Street Y, which is at First Avenue and East 14th Street in Manhattan, running from late November, November 25th, through just before, you should pardon the expression, Christmas, December 24th. Well, say it in Yiddish. What is the title in Yiddish?
Wach
auf und sting. What? Again?
Sing. Wach auf und sing.
Wach auf und schwing. Sing.
Und sing.
I need to brush up on
my... You may recognize the beginning of a verse from Yirmiyahu. Wake up and sing, ye dwellers in the dust.
Now, other plays that you have done, and people would be a little surprised by this one, I mentioned that you also translated Waiting for Godot into Yiddish and staged that. Now, that was written by an Irish guy. So where did you find the Judaism in that one?
You know, Edward Beckett, who is Samuel Beckett's nephew and who is the executor of his estate. We did this play in Northern Ireland. The Yiddish play we did in Northern Ireland at a Beckett festival, and then we did it in Paris at a Beckett festival. And Edward Beckett saw the play both on both occasions. He was just so pleased and so impressed with how the Yiddish fits so well to the rhythms of the play and to the rhythms of
the original. Well, was it written in English or French originally?
He wrote it originally in French, and then he himself translated it into English. But the play, again, it's my bias, but the play, it's just such a wonderful play in Yiddish. Yiddish fits the play so well.
But wait a minute, wouldn't you have had to have gotten Edward Beckett's permission to do it in Yiddish in the first place? You said that he came to see it after you'd done it, but Beckett, Samuel
was... Of course we got permission from the estate.
Yeah, well, but that's weird because Beckett had all these rules and conditions when he was alive of not allowing anybody to change anything. About, you know, you had to have the tree and the thing with the leaves, and you couldn't, in Endgame, you had to have garbage cans.
We were absolutely faithful to Beckett's requirements, but there was no problem getting permission to translate it into Yiddish. My colleague Shane Baker did a masterful translation, an absolutely masterful translation.
How did you find a Yiddish speaker named Shane?
Shane Baker is an Irishman from Texas and Kansas City, Missouri. He's an Episcopalian. That's a story in and of itself.
It sure is. How does that happen?
We have a very, very interesting relationship. You know, the Irish and the Jews are not so far apart. When we did God of Vengeance earlier in the year, the second production of it that we did, Shane and Carrot O'Brien, born in Galway, Ireland, played the two leads. So there's an interesting connection there.
Well, there always was. I mean, if you listen to the Clancy brothers sing about Briscoe being the Irish mayor, Jewish mayor, the Irish and the Jews were great up until the IRA aligned itself with the PLO. And then the Jews started backing away and saying, hey, hold on a minute. But up until then, there was a great symbiosis between those two cultures, if you will. And I will.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, you got quiet at that one. How did God of Vengeance go? Because you did that one in conjunction very specifically with the Paula Vogel play that was on Broadway, Indecent, which was talking about the God of Vengeance story.
Yeah. Wasn't exactly in conjunction. When I read that they were going to do this Indecent, I read about it in the summer of 2015. They were doing it up at Yale in New Haven. I read that they were going to go to La Jolla, and then they were going to possibly come back to New York with it. And I said, okay, this is the right time to do God of Vengeance, because there could be some interesting synchronicity. And I tried very hard to time it out And these things are hit or miss, but it worked out pretty well. We timed it out so that we were pretty well doing the show when it began playing on Broadway. Indecent began playing on Broadway.
Yeah.
So it wasn't something that they had participated in, but once they realized that we were doing it, they certainly took full advantage of our run of it, and it certainly helped us. You know, it was a cross-fertilization. I think it benefited both. Look, Paula is a lovely woman and a...
A fine playwright, yes.
Fine playwright, terribly erudite, wonderfully soft-spoken, but God of Vengeance is a much better play.
Oh, my God. Ooh. Okay, wow. I heard wonderful raves about Indecent. I did not get to see it on Broadway, although everybody can see it on public television in a couple of weeks because Great Performances taped it and will show it on TV, which is
a part of the PBS theater thing. And
yeah.
Look, it's a nice entertainment, and it's wonderfully directed. I think Rebecca
Teichman, yeah,
she deserved a Tony. I mean, it was a well earned. She directed it wonderfully, but look. It's a pale shadow of what God of Vengeance really is. Some of the things that I particularly did not like about the play was the Holocaust section, which was totally fortuitous. And
fortuitous may not be the best word to use dealing with the Holocaust, but okay. How do you mean?
Fortuitous. It did nothing but take advantage of the Holocaust.
Gratuitous, maybe you mean.
Get people teary-eyed. So there were a lot of things that didn't really float my boat about the play.
Okay.
It was nonetheless a very, very solid entertainment and crafted very well to grab a hold of your nostalgia-seeking Jewish audience.
As opposed to God of Vengeance, which you see as a much deeper, albeit, I'm sure, uglier work.
It's a great play. It's one of the great plays of the 20th century.
Wow.
You know, it's universal. It's appeal. It's a controversy. You know, the big controversy with God of Vengeance was that the rabbi of Temple Emmanuel in 1923 brought the complaint to the police that shut the play down.
I didn't realize there was a rabbi who complained and had everybody arrested and people were flagging it for years in the courts.
By Temple Emmanuel.
Wow.
Their reason being that they didn't want Jews to be seen in a bad light. They didn't want Jews to be seen as pimps and brothel owners and prostitutes and hypocrites.
All of whom are some of my favorite people. Yeah.
Therefore, let's just stick to Yubba Bubba Bum and Shalom Aleichem and Tevye and not do anything real. Anyway, that's me. That's my own axe to grind. That's the axe that I grind.
Well, let me ask you about this then. Did you get any blowback? Because it's one thing to do Waiting for Godot, which has a couple of vulgar jokes, and Death of a Salesman, which has a little infidelity and a suicide, but is essentially a very well-respected play about a tragic man with minor flaws. But God of Vengeance, as you're saying, it's whores, it's pimps, it's rabbis doing this, Jews doing this. Were you given pause to say, oh boy?
No.
Hmm.
Absolutely not. And by the way, Waiting for Godot, one thing I want to say about that is that doing it in Yiddish gives the play a context that totally eluded most audiences and most critics at the time. When you understand that Beckett wrote this at the end of 47, beginning of 48, he stayed in France. You know, Beckett was a member of an underground cell, an anti-fascist cell.
Hmm.
It's a long story, and the point I'm trying to make is that who are these two guys? Who are these two guys? Are they tramps? Are they clowns? And what are they doing wandering around after World War II? Who are they, really? If you actually read the play and understand the context of the play, you begin to understand that this is not about nothing. This is not totally absurd. It's a play about the tragedy of these are two people with no place to go in a Europe, you know, after the war, that was full of displaced people.
Okay.
So Yiddish really gave it a a context, and so many people came up to us and said, you know, I've seen this play 10 times, and now we're beginning to understand it. And one woman come up to us after a performance and said, you know, I've seen this play, I don't know how many times, it's the first time I ever cried.
Wow.
So Yiddish has the ability today to inform and illuminate modern world culture and modern world theater. Apart from the klezmer stuff and all of that, keeping Yiddish alive as a spoken word of art and artistic expression is important because it still has a lot to contribute.
Well, but let me throw this back on you again, though. If you want to say that it's still alive, it's still vital, when are you going to start doing new plays in Yiddish? Are there any?
That is an excellent question.
Thank you.
And I'm glad you asked me. Because one of the things that we are doing and working on now is Yiddish theater workshops. One of the things that we are doing is we are gathering the Hasidic, how shall I call it, the Hasidic refugees, the OTDs, off the derech, people leaving the Hasidic community whose first language was Yiddish. And if anybody wants to check it out on Netflix, the documentary One of Us is now available on Netflix, which deals exactly with that. We have started a Yiddish theater workshop that has recruited these folks to come in and begin working on the Yiddish stage so that we have Yiddish actors to carry on the tradition of Yiddish theater.
And Yiddish writers, which is even more...
Well, one of the things we also are working on and have begun is a Yiddish theater writing workshop.
Wow.
There are already some projects in the works where we are trying to encourage people to write original Yiddish dramas. Hopefully, it'll take a little time yet, but hopefully that'll percolate into precisely what you asked for, new works in Yiddish that are relevant and modern and have to do with happening today.
But these plays have to be written, apparently, by people who are no longer in the... I mean, do the Orthodox... I'm not talking about the modern Orthodox, but the Black Hatters, shall we say. Are they not allowed to come to the theater? Do they see these shows that you do? Are they not allowed to? Because there's women in it. What's the story?
You're asking me, Rabbi?
When you see your audiences...
This is kind of funny. Now, look, the Hasidic community, the ultra-Orthodox Hasidim, do not go to the theater.
Mm.
They do have theater on Chol HaMoed Pesach and Chol HaMoed Sukkos. But it's all men. Women are not allowed to attend. But the show is usually streamed around the world and taped so that women can watch the show privately. But theater is not something encouraged by the Hasidic community. Neither are movies, neither is television, neither is the internet.
So even the Chabadniks who do the telethon every year, they just make an exception for that little telethon before the new year. But otherwise, no TV, no nothing?
The Chabadniks are generally less stringent than Satmar or Babif, or Moonkotch, or Square,
or Circle, yeah.
Many of the other, there are so many offshoots now. But the you would call Chabadniks Black Hatters. But the ultra-Orthodox are in a category by themselves.
Okay, those are the Onyx Hatters. You can't even touch them. So what is the makeup of your audience?
What the Israelis call Haredim.
I hear you. So on a given night for the shows that you do, would you say there's a wide age range, or do you still have trouble getting the under 50 crowd, or are there a surprising number of people in their 20s and 30s coming to see?
More and more. Look, our theater, what we do, doesn't appeal to the, it's not nostalgic musical theater.
Okay.
We leave that to the folks being there. What our theater does, Waiting for Godot, is not a play that's going to attract a lot of people who want to see, stamp their feet and clap their hands.
Okay.
Neither is Death of a Salesman. Neither is God of Vengeance. So we're getting a lot of young people coming in. And, of course, people over 50 are very, very welcome.
Well, of course. I mean, you know, it is the over 50 crowd that keeps a lot of the off-Broadway institutions going and go to see serious theater. I mean, let's not denigrate 70-something-year-olds and think, oh, they just want to see Those Were the Days. They just want to see, you know, Oyvind Pribicic again.
Absolutely. That is very true. As you say, it's the older people that are keeping the actual Broadway theater alive, because they're the theater goers.
Right.
First of all, they're the only ones who can afford it. you know, when a ticket to Hamilton can go for $600, $800, who can afford that, right? So.
By the way, tell people how much are tickets to Awake and Sing at the 14th Street Y?
$45.
$45 across the board? Nothing less, nothing more?
Students, there's a $25 student ticket.
Good. Good for you.
We have a policy, speaking of older, we have a policy of not giving senior discounts.
Okay.
Because every single, I would say 99% of the people who are seniors who come to our show can afford 5 times that for a ticket, and they still ask for a senior discount.
Well, that's how they save all their money, that with discounts.
Yeah, so I don't blame them.
Yeah.
I'm not going to make it easy.
I could use them in my temple, donating to our sisterhood, let me tell you. By the way, we're talking with David Mandelbaum. He is the founder and artistic director of New Yiddish Repertory. They're doing Awake and Sing from November 25th through December 24th at the 14th Street Y in Manhattan, all the way down on East 14th Street. Now, I won't say accidentally, but in a certain way, you're a little bit patronizing. You're a little bit denigrating to the National Yiddish Theater, the Volksbühne, in what they do, even as you appreciate, I'm sure, what they do. Was there ever a point when you wanted to work together and it just couldn't work out?
Chabub, I've tried many, many times to get together with them, and to no avail. It's not something that is in the cards, at least not, I don't think, in my lifetime.
Is it because their stuff is just too old and cute, you know, or
look, they've made the decision that they feel that this is the only way they can attract an audience, and fine for them.
Because in looking through your biography, I noticed that you were in a 2002 production of Yentl. Okay, so that's something that they would do, and you were with all the usual suspects in New York modern Yiddish theater. There was Eleanor Risa, Alan Lewis Rickman, who was a guest on this program a few weeks ago, Steve Sterner, who's in every Jewish thing imaginable, and of course the late Mina Byrne, who I got to see in Yiddish theater a few years back.
I did Yentl, and the next year and the year after, I was in their main stage productions. But look, there was a serious backlash of all of these people. Eleanor Risa left the Volksbühne. Alan Rickman no longer works for the Volksbühne, using his own name anyway. Sterling is a guy who can pretty much work with anybody, so he was a great guy.
Now, let me add, Mina, I mentioned, I don't remember if it's Mina or Mina, but Mina Byrne, she was in real Yiddish theater a million years ago. How many of those people did you ever get to meet and talk to and maybe work with who remember the Yiddish theater in its actual heyday?
Not as much as, for instance, the two Irish people I mentioned.
Carried O'Brien and...
They were both Carried O'Brien was very close to Lou Bacatison, who, with her husband Joe Buloff, was one of the original Vilna Troupe. Her father, Luba's father, was one of the original organizers of the Vilna Troupe. She knew Luba. They knew Mina. They Shifra Lehrer, David Rogoff. I did work with Feivish Finkel. I got to meet a few of them, other people managed Seymour Rechtsite. Someone Carried was close to Seymour Rechtsite, Miriam Cresson.
All right, I was just curious about how much you were able to learn first person about that era.
There are other people involved in Yiddish theater who had a lot more, rubbed shoulders a lot more frequently and were intimates of the old timers, not me.
Well, another thing that you very specifically on the website for New Yiddish Rep mentioned that you're forwarding and promoting this idea of the Ashkenazic Jewish culture. Was there a Sephardic theater culture that we just don't hear about?
No.
Okay.
The simple answer is that Ashkenazic culture was not steeped in theater. Music and poetry and storytelling, but they did not have a strong theatrical tradition.
I'm curious, why not, especially since they had all those other cultural things going on?
I wouldn't presume to talk about something I know so little about.
Fair enough. And another thing is, when you're choosing these plays to translate and do, have you thought about Neil Simon, Paul Rudnick, people who have the Jewish rhythms in their English writing? Would Yiddish maybe bring that even more out, or not? You haven't thought?
No, look, you have to, as I said, Waiting for Godot has a wonderful sound in Yiddish, and a wonderful, Yiddish fits it like a glove. It's not necessarily, Yiddish has the same root as English. It's based on German. German and English are from the same, roots. I did a reading of Merchant of Venice in 2011. I used Luther, Jacob Adler's adaptation, but I didn't use his script because it was so Germanized.
Mm.
I used a translation by a fellow named Bupscher. His translation is so perfectly in tune with Shakespeare's rhythms, because Yiddish is an iambic language.
Right.
So he was able to translate a Shakespeare faithfully and beautifully. Gorgeous translation. It's available for people who want to read it, who can read Yiddish and want to read it. So you would think that you say to yourself, well, The Sunshine Boys would be a perfect play for Yiddish.
Right.
It's been translated into Yiddish, and it's been done in Yiddish, but not necessarily self-evident that writers like Simon would translate well. Odets translates very well, because even the English grammar in the original is very Yiddish. It has a very Yiddish feel to it.
But from what you're saying, I mean, you could start looking at Martin McDonagh plays and then see if those work.
You could look at O'Neill. You can look at Gorky. You can look at...
But here's the deal. You are a director and the artistic director of this company, so you have to do this two or three times a year. What plays are you currently looking at for future translation?
Well, first of all, I'm the only one Yiddish theater doing it two or three times a year.
Right.
As a matter of fact, this year, in 2018, we've mounted four productions. I think that's something that hasn't happened in 75, 80 years.
You've done God of Vengeance, you've done the two plays by Wolf Mankiewicz, you've done Death of a Salesman, and now you're doing Awake and Sing, but you have to have...
Rhinoceros, by the way.
Rhinoceros, of course, right, I forgot about that. Well, Eugene Ionesco happened to be Jewish, but yes, you have Rhinoceros too, but I'm saying, what is on your burner?
Next, we're going to do 2 one-acts by a playwright from Israel named Chanoch Levin.
Mm.
I don't know if you... He's, to date, Israel's greatest playwright, as far as I'm concerned.
And you're doing them in Yiddish, not Hebrew.
We are going to do them in repertory in Hebrew, Yiddish, and English.
Whoa.
It used to be that Yiddish was the international language of Ashkenazic Jewry. Today, one would have to say that Ashkenazic Jewry has three international languages: English, Yiddish, and Hebrew. So we're going to do all three of them.
And will it be the same three, the same actors doing them, or different casts?
I like to spread things around among the company, members of the company, so there'll be different casts. There'll be, some will be the same actors, so some will be different casts.
That is really fascinating, and it's also more recent work, which is what we were talking about, too. Hanok Levin is still very much alive in writing. And what else is on the burner that you can talk about coming up?
Let's see, we're going to do, besides that, what we have scheduled is a play called The Puss to Kretschmer, The Empty Inn by Peretz Hirschbein.
Ooh, okay.
Peretz Hirschbein is best known for Green of Felza, Greenfields.
Right, yes.
What is not well known is that he has written some really, really gritty, shocking plays.
Somehow it seems like you gravitate towards that, that you're looking for, as we say, the anti-Volksbühne effect. This idea of, oh boy, you know, you think you're coming in here for a cute little nice Jewish thing and we're going to zap you, we're going to get you. Is that sort of true?
Look, Two by Wolf, those were two lovely little one acts. The Bespoke Overcoat is such a beautiful gem of a one-act play. It's just so heartwarming and at the same time so heartbreaking. That's not so at all. That with a salesman, it's not, you know, there's nothing particularly, it's a great play. What about it is...
I see. Well, he does commit suicide and he has a fan. But I'll ask you, you came out of experimental theater, did you not?
Yeah.
So what were the kinds of things that you did in the years before founding New Yiddish Rep?
I did stuff downtown. When we used to call it downtown, we meant below 14th Street. Mm-hmm. I worked at La Mama. I worked at the Theater for the New City. When I was doing experimental theater, you couldn't walk two blocks down in the Lower East Side without running into a storefront theater. There was a theater called The Garage that was an old gas station.
Well, that's where the Worcester Group is. They're still there.
They're still downtown, yeah.
Yeah, well, the Worcester Group is in the Performing Garage, or is it a different place you're talking about?
No, it's a different place. It's called The Gas Station, and it was an old gas station, and it's an open-air theater. So you couldn't walk two blocks without bumping into some experimental theater group.
What was your favorite show that you were in as a younger actor doing theater in this downtown-y kind of way?
A show that I produced and was in at Theater for the New City called Broken Bohemian Hearts in Alphabet City.
Okay. Why was it so lovely?
It was just a unique experience in every way.
Okay.
I won't go into it because you'll start hocking me about how I want to do gritty and this and that and the other thing. But, you know, theater is the musical theater genre, which was an American musical theater is an offshoot of Yiddish theater.
I mean,
look at the people, Irving Berlin, George Gershwin.
Frank Lesser.
Look at the people who have come up with the great American musicals. It had a profound influence on American musical theater.
Of course.
At a certain point, how many times can you revive Fiddler on the Roof before you say, okay, enough, we're ready, you know?
I get that. I was just curious about, because it's not like you knew Yiddish Rep was founded in 1972. You were doing theater for years and years, and I'm trying to reconcile what you were doing back then, and how are you making a living doing that?
I'm not.
Ha!
I'm starving.
Do you still have a day job?
Any of you folks out there want to send a donation, go to our website, and... we could use it.
What theater could...
We managed to do a lot with very little. That's the way it's been, and that's the way it continues to be, and we are going to continue to do Yiddish theater, and we're going to continue to find ways to expand the horizons of Yiddish theater and bring in new audiences and make a definite impact on modern theatrical culture and modern world culture with Yiddish. We are doing it. We are going to continue to do it. What more can I say?
No, a halavai. Halavai is all I can say about David Mandelbaum. He is the artistic director of New Yiddish Rep, which is producing their latest Yiddish translation. It's Awake and Sing, the Clifford Odets play. It's running from November 25th through December 24th at the 14th Street Y. It's over on First Avenue, or by First Avenue. To find out more and to buy tickets, go to newyiddishrep.org, newyiddishrep.org. Last question for you, David, if I may. I'm curious, since you're not just the artistic director, but you also direct most of these shows.
I don't.
Oh, you do? So who's directing Awake and Sing?
Me, but this is the first one that I've directed.
Oh, my God. Well, let me ask you, do you direct actors differently in Yiddish? Do they have to be a little more large than they would if they're doing English?
Look, there's definitely a zest that goes along with Yiddish, but really, no. I don't believe that there's a quantifiable difference between directing in Yiddish and directing in English. It's nice to be able to direct Yiddish-speaking actors when you're doing a Yiddish show.
And do you direct them in Yiddish, or are your stage, when you're talking to them, do you go back to English?
It depends on the situation. Right now, it's a combination of Yiddish, Hebrew, and English, because we have a couple of people from Israel who were with Yiddish Spiel for a dozen years that have come over and joined our company. So it's a mix. As I said, today, the Ashkenazic international languages are Hebrew, Yiddish, and English, and that's pretty much the mix that we have during rehearsal.
Oh, by the way, speaking of the actors, I forgot to also mention that you have a friend of the neighborhood in your cast, someone who's been on this radio program many years ago, Amy Coleman, who was on there, I think, with Valerie Smaldone many years ago on this show.
Amy, as a matter of fact, is a co-founder of New Yiddish Rep.
Oh.
And she also happens to be my wife.
Oh, I do. Oh, mit Mazel. How long have you been married?
30, it's hard for me to remember at this point.
oh, boy. 30, well, you better when the anniversary rolls 36, around.
36, 37 years, I don't know.
Well, may you be married for 370 years, and may your theater continue for 370 years beyond that.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, David Mandelbaum, for being with us in the neighborhood. Much success to your theater and to Awake and Sing, and shalom to you.
Shalom, shalom, ve'ein shalom, and thank you for having me.